Welcome to the Great Lakes Golf Podcast for the week of May 22nd. This is Hunter Pulaski alongside Brad Burkaw. We are brought to you by Reed Furniture. Whatever your furniture need, it is Reed indeed. On this week's episode, the PGA Championship wraps up at Oak Hill with Brooks Koepka capturing his fifth major of his career. We have college postseason action taking place. We have high school postseason action starting to take place here in the next couple weeks. We have the Charles Schwab Cup at Colonial this week with a pretty darn good field for being a non-elevated event. And we will finish up by talking about a little bit of golf that we played this past weekend. But first, let's talk about Brooks Koepka at the PGA Championship. He's back. And I know I've heard that 25 times in the last 3 days, but this is good for golf, and Brooks playing well is pretty incredible.
Yes, it is. And man, is he playing well. I mean, he blew everybody away.
Yeah, so I want to say, I think you said you had the leaderboard in front of you, and I apologize, I'm putting you on the spot if you don't, but I want to say back-to-back 66s on the weekend.
Yes.
Okay.
I think so. Yes.
That's incredibly good at that golf course. When everyone, especially on Saturday, when those guys on Saturday looked like they were having maybe the worst day of their entire lives, and it feels like now that's twice now with the Masters and now the PGA where the rain and the weather has played a major factor.
Yes. And so I don't know if you saw this. I think it was from this weekend, but I saw it going around on Twitter. It was a picture of Justin Thomas with his hat on backwards, just like soaking wet. And he was putting in with his wedge and just looked miserable.
Yeah. So that's like the old adage that that's what you do when you're playing bad. You put your hat on backwards, like a little like rally cap sort of thing. But I imagine I took it as it being, he was probably just sick of being out there. But then also it was like the Jim Furyk when he won the tour championship, however long ago that was. And he put his hat on backwards because the rain was falling off the bill and it was becoming like a nuisance to him.
That's more so what I think it was. I think it was just raining so hard that the water was coming off the bill of the cap and just getting in their way. But it was just a funny picture. His facial expression, he just looked absolutely miserable.
Testament to the golf course that it withheld or withstood that much rain. So it was I want to say I started watching the ESPN Plus coverage around like 9 or 10 o'clock on Saturday morning. And by 11 o'clock, they were discussing the possibility of because it looked like there was standing water. They were calling for squeegees. That course was going to have to be shut down for at least a little bit. But somehow they managed to keep playing. I was pretty impressed by that.
Yeah, and obviously a huge shout out to their ground crew there, keeping everything going. But really tough conditions on Saturday. Still, Brooks Koepka, man, he was just firing away.
Yeah, so on top of Brooks, let's just run through the leaderboard real quick. Brooks Koepka wins with a score of 9-under. Scottie Scheffler somehow manages to squeak out a second place or a tee second place at 7-under par. Victor Hovland, who we were planning on touching on, really put himself in position to succeed here over the last couple of years in the majors. That one bad swing on, I want to say it was 15 or 16 in that fairway bunker, did the exact same thing that Corey Connors did the day before. And if you asked him if he mishit it or if that was the wrong club the whole time and he was trying to just be a little bit too aggressive, I'm not entirely sure. But that was obviously a kind of the defining moment for him in the final round.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was really interesting because they said in the coverage that Connors also hit 9-iron and just plugged it right into the side of that fairway bunker. So I don't know. I mean, I guess it's odd to think that they both mishit it, but from the angle of the TV coverage, it looked like you could easily get a 9-iron out of that bunker. So I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think Corey Connors has mishit a shot in like 20 years. So that was, I think it had to have been a misclub.
Yeah,
continuing on, Cam Davis This is where, so it was essentially a three horse race, which I would have said was a two horse race the whole day. Scotty Scheffler, is he good? I'm not sure. He backdoored his way more than anybody can backdoor their way into a T second. So Cam Davis in fourth or T fourth at 300 par. Kurt Kitayama continues to show that he may deserve it, depending on how this live and Ryder Cup all shakes out. Kurt Kitayama is asking to be on the Ryder Cup team. I know that is asking a lot, but he has some really good finishes. Bryson DeChambeau played well Thursday, Friday, had himself near the lead or in the lead. He finished at 3 under after a tough, tough weekend. Sepp Straka, I want to touch on him real quick. I think he had an awesome Sunday. I'm pulling it up real quick. So he finished at 2 under par in
5 under on Sunday.
Yeah, in a T7th, but played great on Sunday. He is a guy that the Europeans will depend on at the Ryder Cup, I think. And this once again goes back to the LIV Golf and how that all shakes out. But he, I don't know, as crazy as, I don't know how you could possibly keep him off given how many of those LIV guys would typically be Ryder Cup guys. And Sepp has a win last year. He has a top 10 now at a major this year. So somebody to look out for this fall. Rory McIlroy finished T7th. Just could not get it going. He was hitting the ball everywhere. The driver was just not cooperating the way it should. And I think that's been, for what now feels like the whole season has been, besides those first couple weeks, has been the storyline, is that driver that he is hitting that stealth too. He cannot find the center of the fairway consistently.
Yeah. Him and honestly, the guy right behind him, Justin Rose, both of them, it was honestly impressive to watch them manage to place in the top 10 with barely hitting any fairways at that course, because that rough was certainly not forgiving.
No, and that's what, when it started raining on Saturday, that you add in what wasn't like super, we've played in longer, or they've played in longer rough, but it was so thick, and then you add in the rain, oh man, they looked like they were having to essentially have to hit wedge out of a lot of those rough. Or at least I feel like I would have to hit wedge out of everything.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, something with some face just to get it out of there. But a side note, just a testament to how difficult this course was. I don't know if you saw on Twitter going around, Joel Damon's caddy Gino played the course. And he's a scratch golfer, I think like a maybe one handicap, and he shot at 85.
Yeah, which I don't think he was necessarily disappointed with. Joel put Gino's over under at 84.5.
Yep.
And I think Gino's a plus 0.1. Obviously a really good player. I think he played in college. And Joel and him played growing up together, but to see 85, I think that's what people don't quite realize. Like I see it on Twitter, and I almost think like they have to be trolling, like what they say, but they're like, well, I'm a one or two handicap, and I think I could shoot 79 oak kill. And it's like, get lost.
Yeah. Not a chance, man. You've got guys out there, Keith Mitchell shooting 7 over. I mean, looking at some of these scores, and this is not to brag on these guys' games at all, just to say how hard this course is. You've got guys like Sam Burns missing the cut at 14 over. And yeah. Sam Burns is a hell of a golfer. So that's nothing against him. That's just the testament to this course.
No, exactly. And I think when it, I mean, if your driver is not cooperating, you're not going to hit any greens. So you're just going to be forced to having it up and down the entire day. And they kept talking about it. The greens didn't look overly difficult. Once you got on them, they were for the most part fairly flat in places. And there were a lot of chances to make putts, but if you were missing fairways in that rough and you were forced to hit 200 yards and you weren't able to get that up and down, then you're just, it's a quick and slow death.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of the pins were kind of tucked in the corners. So they were trying to get you to play to the middle and then hit towards the outside of the green. So, I mean, if you're like you're saying, if you're stuck in a situation where you're trying to get up and down, hitting into the to the corner of the green, it's just making it that much more challenging on yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Finishing out, let's round out the. We'll just do the top 15 because I'm sure we want to talk about Mr. Block for a quick minute. Cameron Smith, T9th at one under par. Patrick Cantlay, T9th at one under par. Justin Rose, also T9th at one under par. Shane Lowry, T12th. Victor Perez had a really good Sunday, finished even par, T12. Corey Connors fell back a little bit on the weekend, finished T12th. Tyrrell Hatton, T15th. Eric Cole, who has come out of nowhere, finished T15th. And then Michael Block, who kind of stole the show this weekend, finished at T15th, one over par as well. There's not much to say about, I mean, there's not much to say that hasn't already been said, but the whole essence of the PGA Championship is to remember to honor these PGA professionals and what they do for the game of golf day in and day out. So to see one of these guys that in see one of these guys that appears to be like an absolute stick in every sense of the word with a very long resume in California, it was cool to see for what like them being honored and then him playing so well and then to play with Rory, make a hole in one. It was very much storybook.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like you could write a movie about it. I mean, it's like the storyline to a Disney movie almost.
It really is.
It was awesome to see, and then him getting up and down on 18 to secure his spot for next year was obviously pretty cool. And the pictures that were taken with all the people standing around him after he hit his shot, and yeah, I mean, just obviously everybody's talking about it. It's the he's stole America's hearts. But just such an awesome story, really cool for him. And like you said, dude, this guy can play golf. He's got, I saw something. He's got like the course record at his course. He works at Royal Tribeca or whatever, like 59. So, I mean, he could play golf. The guy's good. But yeah, the hole in one, just dunking it, absolutely dunking it. Didn't even know it went in. And then he's got his Hazel rocket, just the ups and downs on the weekend. That Hazel rocket was one of the craziest ones I've seen on TV.
We talked about it. That well, I mean, just I think it was because he wasn't a professional golfer, you it lends itself for the possibility of seeing some shanks. And that ball was so far right, so fast. Should have been OB. Ended up hitting the tree. And I think he still made double. So it was and on one of probably one of the easier holes in the golf course. I think it was only like 165 yards. But for him to bounce back like he did and to shoot 3 rounds of 70 and one round of one over is like that's what's most impressive to me because you can. There are guys, you'll see it with whether it be amateurs in the Masters or PGA professionals in the PGA Championship, amateurs in the Open, things like that. They'll play one or two rounds of good golf, and you'll see the amateur at the top of the leaderboard or near the top of the leaderboard. But at some point, they're going to shoot 78 or 77, and then for him just not do it was was wild. I was just
Yeah.
weird. I think everyone was. It was a cool story, but I think everyone was waiting for the big number, and it just never came.
Yeah, the consistency was impressive. I mean, in my experience and based on what he said, I've known PGA professionals that don't play often. So, and he even said in interviews, he's like, I'm not going out to the range and hitting balls. So to have that kind of consistency without, I'm imagining a ton of preparation is impressive for sure. But just an awesome story. And he's playing again this weekend. He's got a few more tournaments in him.
Yeah, I don't know if this guy, if he just doesn't, what does he not have a job anymore? Because he's at Colonial this week. He's at RBC Canadian Open in a few weeks. He's at a tournament in Europe in a few weeks after that. He has He's in the U.S. Open final qualifying.
So. Yeah, he's going to have to cancel some lessons. But I was joking with Lauren last night, though, because we went golfing, and she was asking me about it because she kind of follows golf a little bit, but, you know, doesn't really, just because I watch it, so she kind of sees what's going on. And she was asking me about it, and I was like, yeah, it's pretty cool. It's literally like if the guy we were just talking to behind the desk went out this weekend and placed top in T15.
Isn't that crazy? I wonder, cause, so he did say that he does not play. Is he trying to say that he's a shop hand? Because that can't be true.
He said something like he's not going out and just like drilling balls at the range every day, I think, was more so what it was. I'm sure he plays, but, you know, he's not, I don't think he's grinding. He's not a range rat anymore, I guess, is probably what he was getting at.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Which, you're on him.
Which, I mean, you know, obviously most of these pros are, so.
Yeah.
The pros.
All right. Any other takeaways from the PGA Championship? I think Oak Hill was to the test. Everyone that I heard spoke very highly of it. I mean, you can see it. There have been times over the last several years where the course just kind of becomes unmanageable and becomes too tough. And I think they found that perfect medium of challenging, but yet still rewarded really good shots.
Yeah, I would agree. I think for most of us golfers, it can be somewhat humbling, I guess. I don't know what the word is, but to see some of these guys struggle out here, it makes them feel more human. So obviously every one of us would go out there and probably shoot over 100, but nonetheless, it still can be fun to see them struggle out there.
I wonder, what do you think you would shoot out there? Because I think if you went in with the goal of breaking 100, if that was your goal, was just to break 100, I think you could essentially say, like, I'm just going to hit it. I'm going to be having a putt at par. And this is easier said than done, but if you just hit like a 3-wood or a hybrid off the tee, and then you hit another hybrid up near the green, then you hit it on. And so, like, at least you take out the rough. It's not like, I can guarantee hitting a hybrid in the fairway.
Are we playing from the same tees as they played?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I would like to think I could break 100, yeah. That's probably where I'd draw the line. That's where I'd have my own breaking 90 series there would probably be where I'd draw the line.
Yes, okay. Yeah, I think that's... I would have to be playing good golf, I think.
See, what worries me is the number of putts I would have on that course is so terrifying to even think about. I don't want to say it on air.
Well, I mean, I think we both feel the same way, but I did, side note, and we'll get into it later, I'm sure. Brad and I played this weekend, and I putted pretty terribly. And I think I'm going to blame it mostly on the amount of alcohol I had the night before and the coffee. Because I putted last night, like later in the day, and I putted fine.
Coffee for sure.
Yes.
Coffee is a.
And I don't know what to do about that one because I have to have coffee, but at the same time I can't keep shaking like I'm a limp tree branch in the wind when I'm over a 4-footer.
Yeah, it's tough because it's like either you get the shakes or you get the headaches.
Yes. Both equally bad. And I think there is a world where you can have coffee. I just need to eat the right amount of food to almost like offset it, but it's hard to find that happy medium.
I wonder if you could take like caffeine pills.
Oh, I have some of those. I might have to try that.
You could just dull down the dosage a little bit.
All right, and then if that's all we have from the PGA, I meant to talk about the LPGA last week, because they had the week off this week But last week, or I guess it'd be 2 weeks ago now, they had the Founders Cup, which was in Clifton, New Jersey. And actually, I have a, when I worked in Florida, I had a member that was in Florida who was also a member at this place. It looks very, very cool. This was May 11th through the 14th. Jin Young Ko, back in the winner's circle after suffering some wrist injuries. She was on the heater of all heaters before the injury. So to see her back in the winner's circle is awesome. 68, 68, 72, 67. She came back to beat Minji Lee in the final round after a 67 compared to Minji Lee's 71. So congratulations to Jin Young Ko. They are back playing this week at the Bank of Hope LPGA match play in Las Vegas. So tune into that. You can find that on the Golf Channel, 1:30 to 4:30. And then later in the day, 7:10, 7:10, 5:30, 8:30, all on the Golf Channel all weekend. A little bit of Peacock as well. So keep an eye out for that. Moving on to college golf. Can you still hear me?
All right. Yep.
My microphone just broke in my hand.
So let me see that.
Bad radio, but I'm holding my microphone in my hand right now. It just
that is gritty.
I don't know what to do. I feel like I lost the piece. Oh boy. All right. Well, here we are. I'm just gonna take my headphones off real quick. All righty. Here. How does this work?
This would be a good time to just have her cut it and then have her cut it back in.
Yeah, this thing is just not gonna go in here. All right, and we're back. One sec. All right. For those not watching the YouTube channel, which doesn't exist for now, my microphone just broke, but I fixed it. So we're back. moving on. Can you hear me, Bob?
Yep, okay. You're good.
Moving on to college golf. So last time we talked, Michigan State girls won their regional at... in Florida. They are now on to the NCAA Women's Championships, which is now finished. They ended up in, let's see here, ended up in finishing 21 over par over the three rounds. They did not advance to the top eight. They shot 293, 294, 298. As far as individual scores go, if I can find them real quick. Maybe not. Bad radio.
Just giving everybody a little bit of a break.
Yeah, we can't push it too hard. So as far as the individual scores go, Brooke Bierman finished plus six. Valentina Rosa finished plus six as well. Layla Raines finished plus 16. Shannon Kennedy plus 10. And Katie Liu finished plus one to round out the individual scores for the Michigan State ladies. Stanford ended up winning the stroke play portion of the event. The match play portion of the event is finishing up, I believe, today, where USC is taking on Wake Forest. USC upset Stanford in the, I believe that'd be the semifinals. Rose Zhang, who has had an absolutely sensational amateur career, has won the individual portion of the event. She came back from, I believe, four down in the final round to win. That is now her second Player of the Year award, I believe. And that also, just a side note, I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name. We had a two-time winner of the Ben Hogan, Ludwig Åberg, I believe is his name, is a Texas Tech golfer. He won the Ben Hogan for the second consecutive year. A little trivia for you, Brad. There's only one other person to do that. You know who that person is. He's really good at golf.
Is his name Mr. Jordan Spieth?
No. No.
The only other person to win the Ben Hogan twice?
Yes.
Tiger Woods?
Nope. This generation, I would say.
Justin Thomas.
John Rahm. John Rahm. And his picture, which I cannot show via podcast, is very, very funny. His Ben Hogan Award. He has like the chubbiest little face you're ever going to see. He has really reminded me of Rory back when he was like 17, 18, and he had that round, chubby face.
I'm pulling it up right now. Yes, he does.
So that made me laugh. And that, so back to Rose Zhang. She ended up losing in the semifinal match to her USC opponent. So USC versus Wake Forest for the national championship for the ladies. For the men, NCAA, the regionals for the men finished up last week. The Michigan State boys just missed out on qualifying. Top five teams advanced. They finished at 1 under par in the Eagle Eye regional down in Lansing. They finished 272, 285, 294. And then finally, the Grand Valley State boys are in the D2 National Championships in Warren, Ohio. They are currently T6th at 286 through one round. So we'll keep you updated. Or actually, 286 and 294 through two rounds, one more round left. So they need to finish in the top eight to advance to match play, currently sitting in a tie for sixth. As far as individual scores go, Bryce Wheeler is 1 under par, Nick Kruger 1 over par, Drew Coble 1 over par, Charles DeLong 6 over par, and Charlie Cooley is 13 over par for the individuals. And I think that's all I have for college. We will keep you up to date on the high school, which should be regionals should be taking place here over the next week or so. So when we have scores from Petoskey and other area schools, we will make sure to relay those on to you. All right, moving on to the Charles Schwab at Colonial. A little bit of course info regarding Colonial, which I'm pulling up now, if I can find it.
I've got a little bit of it pulled up
take
here.
It away. Take the wheel.
We've got Colonial Country Club this weekend in Fort Worth, Texas. It is bent grass greens, Bermuda grass fairways. It is the longest active non-major tour event to be held at the same venue. So we have a lot of history and tradition here. Course was founded in 1936 by a Marvin Leonard, who eventually ended up selling the course to its members, I believe. So that's about all I have. Oh, and it's playing, I think, at 7,200 yards.
Yeah, par 70, 7,200 yards. Yep. It is, and you mentioned longest running. I think we're going on 77 years now of it being here at Colonial.
1946 was the first tournament.
It's a long time ago.
And it's changed names over the years, but as of late, the sponsor has been Charles Schwab.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm just trying to see anything that stands out from this is our last year with this current course design. Gil Hance is taking over, doing a full renovation, starting right after the addition of this tournament. We have, for it being a non-designated event, we have 11 of the top 30 guys of the official world golf rankings in the field, including Scottie Scheffler, including Max Homa, who's sixth in the world now. So I think I know the players like Colonial, so I'm glad to see the field that it has, given the fact that it's not a designated event.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. I mean, we've got, like you mentioned, Scottie Scheffler, Tony Finau this week, Jordan Spieth, Victor Hovland, Colin Morikawa, Sung J.M., Justin Rose, Tommy Fleetwood, Ricky Fowler, Sam Burns, the list goes on. Tons of good golfers this week for, like you said, a non-designated event. So that's awesome to see.
Yeah. No, this is really good. So as far as the odds boards go, which maybe you have pulled up, but if not, I'm pulling it up right now. I have to imagine Scottie Scheffler is the odds-on favorite.
He certainly is. At 4-1, behind him, you've got Victor Hovland at 14-1, Jordan Spieth 14 as well, Tony Finau 14, Colin Morikawa 16-1, Sung J.M. 20-1, Justin Rose 25-1, Max Homa 25-1, and I will round it out here at Ricky Fowler at 30-1. But some big names there.
Yeah, and I think I'm tired of doubting Scottie Scheffler, which I've said what feels like 1,000 times now.
Yeah, you know. So,
but 4-1, 4-1 is tough.
It is. It's certainly tough. That's tough for an outright. I don't know if I would see a lot of value there, but I do have him on my list this week. So I know we mentioned it a few weeks back, but when you play in Texas, you bet Texas guys. So this week I've got the Texas special. I do have Scottie Scheffler in a top five. I mean, I think that's almost guaranteed at this point. I don't know what is up with this guy. I don't know what his deal is. I don't know if he's good or not, but I'm going to bet on him for the first time in my life this week.
Surely to play terrible. He's surely going to struggle. He's going to play so bad.
He's going to miss the cut. Yeah. He's probably going to miss the cut, and then I'm going to write him off for good.
Yeah.
And then I'll just be done with him. Outside of him, I'm taking a little bit of a risky pick here, in my opinion, on my boy Jordan Spieth for a top 10. He made the cut at the PGA, which I honestly didn't even think he was going to play. I figured he would withdraw, but maybe he just was really going for that career Grand Slam. But I've got him in a top 10 this week. We'll see how the wrist holds up. Texas boy playing in Texas. So I've got him on there. And then my third Texas boy, once again, Ryan Palmer. I've got him top 40. It's, in Michigan, it's plus 115. So you can get him at plus money for a top 40. And he's a Texas boy playing in Texas. So those are my three guys I'm riding this week.
Yeah, Palmer, for it being his home club, still chasing that first win. It's a 20th start here at Colonial. The guy's just a grinder.
I was pulling up his info on the models, and I almost doubled. I thought I had more than one course selected because there were so many results for him at this course. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, so you made a good point about the Texas guys, which we talked about a couple weeks ago, that there's something about it which sounds so obvious, but I think it's even more so for Texas given the winds that can pick up. So I like Jordan Spieth. Tony Finau is a name that is interesting to me, sitting at plus 1400 in Michigan on FanDuel. He is not even a month removed from his victory at in Mexico. And he's 7-for-7 at Colonial. He's got a solo second in 2019, a T4th in 2022, among five top 20s on top of that. So that's a guy that I don't know if it's necessarily an outright, but a guy that needs to be on the radar, I think. He didn't play great at Oak Hill, finished T70th or 72nd, I think. But a name I'm looking out for. I don't necessarily want to bet Victor this week, but I think he's playing, his game is obviously in very good shape right now. I think he can play well around Colonial. He He's 2-for-2 at Colonial, 2 top 25s in his two trips that he's made. So maybe like a top 20. I'm not sure what the number would be on that, but I imagine it wouldn't be terrible. And just for the sake here, I will quickly pull it up. It looks like he's just under even money, so minus 115 at top 20. I don't know if I love that value, but that is a name I'm looking out for. I saw Colin Morikawa's name circulating quite a bit on the airwaves. I think that's a name that in theory makes a ton of sense as far as a ball striker. I think this is the second shot golf course where the greens aren't the biggest, so you have to hit your irons well. But his results aren't the best here, where he had a T40 last year, and then he has 5 top 15s. So T40 last year, and then he has 5 top 15s this year. So maybe he's building on something, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, with his ball striking ability, always someone to keep an eye on. I know he's been struggling a little bit as of late, but he played well in the Masters. So, and he's just a guy that I think he's one of those any given week kind of guys. You know, there's guys you can give that AGW label to. Mm-hmm. Any given week, they can go out and shoot a numbers. So I like those guys. I think outside of my Texas guys, and in your picks here, another one worth noting is just Sam Burns, since he won last year. He's also not been playing super well lately, but obviously has proven that he can play well on this course. So another one to keep your eye on this week.
Yeah, I think this is I'm going to call this a get right week for Max Homa, who's been playing some like very average golf as of late. Last five starts, only one top 40 finish, which was at Quail Hollow, where he's a previous winner. I'm not expecting him to win, and I don't think he has the course history to back it up. His best finish here is a T23rd last year. But he needs to get right week before they go over to the U.S. Open, which I have him contending at very heavily, given the facts in California. But he needs a week where he sees the ball go in the hole and a few less shots than what it's been going in.
You know what he needs before the U.S. Open? He needs to have another kid.
Yeah. Wow.
That was his secret sauce.
Yeah.
Was having that baby.
Yeah, which I think that makes you play better. I think Peter and I last year, 2 years ago, talked about this on the podcast, that I think once you have a kid, it makes you you're playing for more than just yourself at that point, and you're also like, it kind of puts your priorities, makes you like realize what's important in life, what's not as important in life. So I think it can help you. And it's proof to, I mean, John Rahm had a kid and he goes on a tear. Max Homa has a kid, he goes on a tear.
Yep. I think Rory, after he had Piper, he was playing well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah,
I mean, I don't have the same perspective. I do not have children myself, but I can imagine that would provide perspective that currently I certainly don't have.
Amen. All right. Anything else from the Charles Schwab?
No, I mean, I think it's, you know, we had a awesome weekend last weekend, seeing all the guys tee it up, Liv and PGA Tour alike. I would say for the listeners, feel a little spoiled this weekend, because it's not every designated event is going to have a field like this. So take advantage of it. But no, that's about it for me.
All right. Did you play any? You play any golf this weekend? Besides, I guess we can talk about. We played Birchwood Sunday morning. The woods and the birches. I was pretty impressed. I'm starting to think that it was just a really good winter for grass, because everywhere I've played so far, I've been pretty impressed with the conditions. The greens were lightning fast. I might have had 65 putts. Maybe a few less, maybe a few more. I lost count somewhere near the backside. But I think it just helps that it's 45, 50 degrees at night right now, and the grass is just not growing at night. So they put a small little cut on it, and it makes the ball just go.
Oh, yeah. Those greens ate me alive. I couldn't figure them out.
Yeah, so you had like four or five, maybe not four or five. It was like two or three times where you putted it past the hole on one line, and then you putted it back on the opposite line, and it like just didn't do it. It didn't do logistically or from a physics standpoint. It didn't make sense what was happening.
I was in a torture chamber,
yes,
to say the least. But it was, I mean, that course was awesome. There was no one out there. I mean, we were scooting around. It was great pace. I mean, with the three of us played in, and we were done by 11:15, weren't we?
Yeah, maybe a little, or somewhere around there. It was about 3 hours, and we played. The woods is the newest of the 27 holes, and it's kind of out in the, it is out in the woods, and some of the tracks between holes is pretty lengthy. It's not like your average country club where everything, every green's right next to the tee box. So I think we played the woods in like an hour and 45 minutes. And I was like, I was getting a little concerned that we weren't going to make, because I had to play Belvedere at 1 o'clock. But then we played the Birches in like an hour and 15 minutes, which I think that helps that everything was so close together.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're not driving over a mile to get to your next hole. Yeah, no, that was an awesome course. I really enjoyed it. Thanks to you for having me out. That was a great time.
Yeah, of course. I have to do it again.
I did play some other, another course up north this weekend. I played at Antrim Dells.
Oh, good old Antrim Dells.
Is always holds a special place in my heart. And funny enough, I show up there and the Lake Michigan Conference was hosting a tournament there. So they even had the buffet out and everything. And I was telling the guy, I was like, yeah, I remember the buffet. And, but that it's just an awesome golf course, has a pretty laid back vibe there, which is nice for up north. And what I will say, and I don't know what your thoughts are, but mine personally is that's a hard golf course.
Yeah, no, that's kind of my, especially the backside. There's some, so I want to say one's not terribly hard. Two is a hard golf course, especially a hard golf hole, because the wind is typically, if it's out of the west, like it typically is, two, I think, is right into the wind, and it's a long hole.
Yep.
And then the back nine, it gets a little bit tighter too.
Yeah, the back nine's just more tight.
Yeah,
off the tee box is what it is. So if you're not hitting your ball well off the tee, you're gonna struggle there. But yeah, course is in great condition.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what else. I'm trying to think of any holes that, because we played there last fall, and I was pretty impressed for the conditions given the time of year. Played Belvedere on Sunday after Birchwood. That I love that place. That's a place I could play a lot of golf at and not get bored.
So I haven't played there in like at least a decade over since high school. I just haven't. I don't know why. It's like every time it comes up in conversation of where should we play, for some reason it just never gets picked. So I just haven't been there in like forever.
Yeah, it is. It is easily in my top three or four golf courses in this area. And if I really thought about it, I played it a few more times. There's just a lot of history there with all of the Michigan AMs that it's hosted and the Michigan Opens it's hosted. And then it's, for being such an old golf course, if you play from the tips, that's like a 7,700-yard golf course. So that's a really dog of a golf course.
Yeah, that's got some meat on the bone.
Mm-hmm. And the bunkering's really good. The greens are really tricky. I was surprised. I was expecting to go from Birchwood being really fast to Belvedere. Typically keeps the greens not fast because of how much undulation there is on the greens, but they were rolling just the same as Birchwood. I was pretty blown away.
Let's make it a point, say on air, to play that. I want to play that course soon this summer. We'll make a little content out of it.
Yeah, definitely. And that's one of those courses that stays like very, very affordable throughout the entire season. I think they have some weird hours, like where you only can play in the afternoon most days, I want to say, or something like that because of the membership, but we'll figure it out. And I will say the place in general is very strange, where like there's no There's no clubhouse. I mean, there is a building that I think is signified as a clubhouse that has a locker room in it, but there's no food or dining. There's no beverages or anything like that. The clubhouse has like two couches in it and a couple chairs. It is very much a golf club.
Yes. Yes. It's about the golf.
Yes.
Which I love.
Yeah.
Definitely. Very much like my membership down here. All business. So wrapping it up, I think I had one last little tidbit that I wanted to touch on. And then if you had anything else, feel free to add it in after that. But I wanted to partially ask you and talk a little bit. So we played golf. What was it, on Thursday? I think it was. We played golf with Hunter's son. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about how you have been approaching golf with him, because he's got a good swing. I mean, I could tell he plays, like, he likes to play.
Mm-hmm.
So how has that been going?
It is a lot of push and go, and it's very hard to, it is one of the hardest things I've ever had to do as a parent, is try to teach Mac how to golf, because I get confused who I talk to. I want to say I was telling you maybe off air that, like, when you're playing, if you're playing football with your kid, or you're playing basketball with your kid, or you're playing soccer, like, you can goof off, and like, you can kick the ball, and like, it doesn't really matter how you kick it. Like, as long as you kick it to him, or like, you throw it to him, like, the form doesn't have to be that great. But golf is like, it's not like that. Like, where you, if you aren't focused, you aren't going to hit a good shot. And then if he doesn't hit a good shot, he's going to get pissed, which we're working on that. That's going to take some time, I think. You just aren't going to hit a good shot, like I was saying. So you need to have, so like, finding that very, very, very thin line between having fun and like making it very enjoyable, because that is the number one goal, but then also still having to like focus for a couple seconds to hit the shot. It is interesting, but he likes it almost too much at this age. Like, he wants to be out there all the time, where I don't really think at 6 years old, it's super beneficial to play more than maybe 9 holes. And the worst part is I can't get him to play further up. So he can hit his driver maybe like 80, 90 yards. If he gets a hold of one, maybe 100 yards. But then from there, the 8-iron probably only goes like 40 or 50 yards if he really smokes it. So some of those holes, it's just taking a lot of shots, which I don't think he doesn't mind doing it. And he says he wants to play from the tees, and I can't get him because he's so stubborn like me. He won't move up. So that's where maybe we're struggling the most. But he does. To answer your question, it's going.
But. Yeah, no, I just found it very interesting because, and like I said earlier, I don't have kids, but you have to find that. I mean, I was a kid once, so you have to find that line of like pushing them to play, and but not pushing it so much that they start to hate it. But he just seems to love it. And I know we were joking about it while we were playing, and it's like, man, if I knew what golf was when I was 6, I wonder what my life would be like now. So just really cool. And I thought it offers a pretty cool perspective for maybe some of the listeners out there who are fathers or who are going to have kids, and kind of how to approach that. Cause he's at that age, right? Where it's like, I mean, he's athletic, like, for sure. Like, he has athletic ability and he can play, but he is young. So you don't want to force it too hard. Because you want to create that lifelong, you know, love for the game. So I think you're doing a great job. I mean, that kid, he loves it. He just loves golf.
Yeah. And that's where, so it's managing expectations and reminding him that he's only 6 years old. So like, we do a middle school golf program, and it's 6th and 7th grade, and he hits it better than 9 out of 10 of those kids. But it's just when he plays, so only person he really plays with is me, or he played with Brad. That was the first person he's ever played like a prolonged period with. Like, he sees us hit it, and he's thinking to himself, like, why the hell can't I do that? And so it's getting him to, like, I almost need to take him over and like put him into the first tee for a session or two, just to like kind of show him that this is, you are 6, and like, you are hitting, you do hit it pretty well for 6, and you don't have to crush it every time to, or you don't have to hit it 300 yards, 250 yards to be a good golfer at this age.
Right. And I think that'll come too naturally. Eventually he'll start playing more with his peers and and getting into junior tournaments and stuff. And he'll, once he sees like his comparison.
Yeah. I think it's just like the taller he gets, the bigger he gets, like the leap he took from last year to this year has been pretty impressive. I think that's mostly just because he's growing up. He's growing quite a bit too. And he's just if you're short, you don't have as much leverage to the ground. It's harder to create clubhead speed, things like that. So it's just slowly but surely. But it is fun. I mean, it is essentially now we're at the age now where I'm able to be at the golf course 7 days a week, which is like my dream. So I can play. Yes. I play my 2 or 3 days with my buddies, but then Mac and I are there every other day. That's nice.
Yes, you're turning him into a little fiend. I love it.
Yeah, we are.
Well, thanks for sharing your perspective on that. I kind of popped that up, but I'm sure others appreciate your perspective on that delicate age of introducing golf to young kids.
Yeah, because obviously, and you mentioned it, like the last thing you want to do is burn. I want this to be like a lifelong game for him and like to him have fun, but you don't want to, like I'm asking him, more times than not, like, are you still good to play? Like, you want to keep playing? And it's him that's saying, like, oh, yeah, you can tell he'll start hitting some bad shots towards the end. It's like he's just getting, because this is after more times than not a full day of school, and we go on days that he has tennis on Mondays. So he has an hour of tennis, then he goes right to golf. So it's just like a long day for him at 6 years old. So I'm trying to be the one that's like, we probably should head home here soon. But he's a little fiend.
He's hooked.
Yep.
Yeah. No. It's trying to. You want to maximize potential, but not burn them out.
Yeah. Exactly. All right.
Well, yeah. That's about it for me. I think I'm looking at my notes here. That's about all I had this week. So, did you have anything else you wanted to touch on?
I don't think so. Only thing I found interesting. I'm pretty sure we talked about in the group quickly. I'm pretty sure Brooks Koepka just qualified. Like auto qualified for the Ryder Cup.
So, that's going to be, yes, that's good point. I'm glad you brought that up. So, that's going to be,
that's going to be fascinating to see this all play out over the next several months leading up to the Ryder Cup. Zach Johnson cannot keep Brooks Koepka out of the Ryder Cup unless PGA of America says you can't let him play, which if they did that, they're fools and it ruins the Ryder Cup. Ruins it.
I think that they would be just idiots to do that. Let them play.
So any of the
LIV guys, if they qualify, let them play.
Yeah. And even if they don't qualify, if you feel like, so let's say Brooks, I don't think Brooks is a good example. I'm trying to think of
Dustin Johnson.
Yeah. Dustin Johnson, great example. So like Dustin Johnson, he doesn't auto qualify, but if you don't think that Dustin Johnson is one of the best 12 golfers in the United States of America, you're a gosh darn fool. And it waters down the Ryder Cup if you don't play your best players. And you could say, the United States could say, well, we don't need our best players to beat Europe. And then that even waters down even more that you don't think that the event's not worth needing your best players at.
They've already taken away so much from us as viewers. Give us the Ryder Cup. If you're sitting there and telling me, and this is and no dig on Kurt Kitayama, but if you're sitting there telling me that Kurt Kitayama over Dustin Johnson, if that's what it came down to, I mean, come on.
It's not even a question. It really isn't. And if these two majors have proved anything, is that LIV golfers can still play golf. I mean, they didn't just go to die. I think what people keep getting hung up on is maybe the bottom half of the LIV field is not the best, but the top half is still like their names are scattered across the leaderboards of both majors so far.
Oh yeah, I mean you had Brooks, you had Bryson, Cam Smith. There are a number of them that made the cut, and so the one thing that I'll say on this is, the PGA Tour is a North American tour. The Ryder Cup is the USA versus Europe. And USA is in North America. don't hold them out. We want the best team out there. We want to win. We've all, you know, it's we won last time. We smoked them last time. Let's run it back.
Yeah. And I think, even furthermore to this point, I'm not sure if you saw it on the Golf Channel Sunday night after the PGA Championship, Brad Faxon and Brandel Chambly got into it a little bit regarding if Brooks Koepka should be in the Ryder Cup or should be on the Ryder Cup team. And Brad Faxon, something yada yada was said, and then Brad Faxon, I think, actually Brandel said something along the lines of, well, they're playing, it's PGA Tour, and Brad Faxon essentially said, well, they're just playing golf, and they're not playing for the PGA Tour, they're not playing for the European Tour, they're playing for their country. So it's not tour versus tour, it is United States versus Europe. It's not, we aren't thinking PGA, we aren't thinking European Tour, we aren't thinking LIV Golf. But Brooks has proven, I mean, Brooks looks like the smartest man alive right now, because he didn't want to play in the PGA Tour events. He thought they were a waste of his time. Nobody remembers how many PGA Tour events anybody has, how many tour event wins anybody has, unless you're Tiger Woods. But guys that are winning 15, 20 events in their lifetime, I have no idea what that number is, but I darn well know he has 5 majors, and that's a very good company he's in now. So for him to make all this extra money and then still compete in the majors, which he just locked himself in for the next 5 years now at all the majors, he looks like a smart man.
Yeah. And I mean, he's raking in all the LIV cash, and he just pocketed like $17.5 million, I think, for winning the PGA.
Yeah, so he just proved that you really do. He can just show up at majors when he's healthy, and he will compete, which is fascinating to me.
Yeah, doesn't it just kind of grind your gears just a little bit?
Yeah, because I don't think, I mean, there are other guys that like the big game moment they play well, but he seems like he is playing, he's able to turn it to just a completely different level. It is awesome to watch. I mean, I would never say I was an anti Brooks guy, but there was a time where I kind of thought he was a little bit of a D-bag. But he's definitely growing on me, because it goes to show you don't have to take the game all too seriously and still be really good, which does frustrate you, but I can respect it.
Yeah. I mean, he's literally that kid in college who didn't show up to class and then showed up for the final and got 100%.
Yes.
Which, those kids, they always piss you off a little bit, but you got to respect it.
Yes, you do. All right. I think that's all I have.
I think that's
all she
wrote.
Good luck to your picks at the Charles Schwab Challenge, and we will talk to y'all next week.
Yep. Have a good weekend, everybody.